Okay, let's start reading 8. Verse 89. Verse 89 is sort of a leftover from last night. And it's about, how to say, basically you have a choice when you get angry. And when you get angry, you can do, I mean, when you're about to get angry, you have two choices. One is to indulge, right? And it sort of feels like eating chocolate sometimes. Like, I'm going to indulge in getting angry. Or sometimes it feels like maybe I shouldn't, right? And then the reasons why you shouldn't get angry are very feeble. They're not very strong. So people decide, when they have a choice between getting angry or not getting angry, they get angry. Because there's not that much to lose. You see what I mean? And Master Shantideva's book has been a lot about trying to convince you that you do have a lot to lose. Okay? And the first argument is that, you know, you live off your good karma. You are breathing and your heart beats because of good things you've done for other people. That's why your heart beats, right? You know how it beats. You know how to keep it beating. Or you know how to do a heart operation. You know all the vessels that come out of the heart. But science has never told us why it beats. Science has never isolated the energy that makes your heart beat. Why does a heart beat for 70 years? You know, why does it do that? And that's just karma. It's just how much you took care of other people. Okay? And when you get angry, then all that energy is, huge amounts of your karma stockpile are destroyed. Okay? Just in 5 minutes, a lot of your karma is destroyed. And that's why this chapter existed in Tibet. It wasn't so much you'll be a nicer person, or everybody will like you more, or you know, you won't get an ulcer, or things like that. It wasn't about getting fired from your work. It was, it'll kill you. And if you understood that dichotomy, you know, either you keep your patience or you die. You see, I mean, then you would be able to be patient, right? Then you could do it. See, right now, the choices are just, are you going to be a nice guy or a bad guy? I don't care, I'll be a bad guy. Okay. But if you thought of the choice as, either get angry, sorry, either keep patience or kill yourself. You're killing yourself. The anger kills you. You see, I mean, then you would be more careful to avoid anger. And then I think there's this attitude. You'd say to people, you're obnoxious. You're not a nice person. You shouldn't be doing what you did to me. It's totally wrong. I don't like you, but I'm going to be patient with you because I don't want to kill myself. You see, I mean, literally. And then it has to be that kind of, it has to be that kind of thing, okay? It has to be that kind of decision in your mind. Then he goes one step more. He says, it not only kills you, it plants seeds in your mind to take you to a weird place after you die, okay? To take you to a weird place after you die. And, you know, we grew up, unfortunately, in a country that just has some wrong ideas, okay? Like 100 years from now, they'll look back at us and say, they were so weird, they had so many wrong ideas. Abhirati Bhanti Darshana in the Yoga Sutra. Just wrong ideas that no one fixed. You know, what are they? Oh, like the idea that you can spend hundreds or thousands of dollars a year on your pet to make them feel good. And then on the other hand, it's okay to kill cows and chickens and other creatures because they don't have feelings. Or that fish have, sorry, maybe dogs have feelings, but fish don't have feelings. Like I had a Tibetan monk, he lived with me, Geshe Lothar. And he said, he worked at a restaurant. And he came home one day and he said, everybody comes in and when they say, I'm vegetarian, I say, okay, I'll get you some French fries or something. This is in a bar, right? And then he says, but then some people will say, I want fish. And I said, I thought you said you were vegetarian. He said, yeah, well, I don't eat red meat. You know, and they said, why? Like, he's just trying to suss out Americans' ideas, you know. And they say, well, cows have feelings and fish don't. You know, he's like, but they go like that when you put the hook on them, you know. And they say, well, it's some kind of nervous reaction or something, you know. And, you know, and I think 100 years from now, people will look back at us and say, they were so barbaric, you know. They'll just say we were barbaric. We wore the skins of other beings. It's like, Do you eat human flesh? No. Would you wear your mother's skin? You see? Would you make a coat out of your own mother's skin? And you say, no, that's barbaric, you know? And then they'll look back on us 100 years from now or 200 years from now, just say, they were barbaric, you know? They just killed innocent creatures who just wanted to be happy. And they killed them to put their skin on their bodies, you see? And they'll just say it was weird. So some kind of wrong views, just about the whole world, right? That we didn't fix yet, avirati bhanti darshana. And another one is that nothing's going to happen to you after you die. You know, you just fade away somehow. And there's no such thing as a hell. You know, oh, they taught that to me in church. And because I rejected the other parts of church, I reject that idea, you know. But people have seen the hells, you know. People have been there. Great saints in India and great saints in Tibet and in America, they have seen the hell realms. And they exist. And you should be worried about them. And if we don't take care of, if we get angry especially, then when you die, you do go somewhere. You don't just stop. It's not like blowing out a candle. Okay? You go on. The mind goes on. Then people say, oh, soul, soul. You don't need a soul. It's not a soul. There is no such thing. It's your mind. It's just your mind. Your mind is immortal. The mind has no end. The mind will continue forever. So if you get angry at people, then the mind sees terrible things. Terrible seeds are planted in the mind, and then the mind sees terrible things. So he's just saying, remember the guy said, I can't put up with small things to save myself from bigger things. And he says, okay, you know, like I can't keep my mouth shut when someone says something bad to me. I have to respond, you know. Someone screws me at work. I have to do something. I have to pay somebody back. I have to alert everybody that this person is screwing me at work, right? And he says, no, just let it go. Just let it go. Why? That's a small pain compared to what you'll get if you make a big fuss, if you get angry and you hate them. You know, if you compare not getting your bonus this year to 10,000 years in a hell realm, what's the difference? You know, what's wrong with you? And then he said, cut your hand, right? Cut your hand off. Like, be willing to lose something small if you could save your life, right? So, that argument's not very compelling for Westerners, but I'm putting a seed there, okay? Verse 90. He's beginning here a discussion about what to do at work if somebody at work starts spreading bad stuff about you, okay? It could, usually I'd say it happens at work. It could be among your friends. It could be in the newspaper or something like that. But people are out after you for some reason, okay? You know, in the scriptures they say it's either because it's true or it's not true, okay? No, really. You can divide all slander about you, all gossip about me, Geshe Michael, can be divided into true or not true. You see what I mean? And he's saying it doesn't. If it's true, then just do something about it. You see? Don't get upset. Don't get angry at something. Somebody said Geshe Michael did that. Yeah, I did. Well, then Geshe Michael should stop doing that. You see what I mean? And not get angry that someone said it out loud. Okay? And then if it's not true, what's it matter? You see, I mean, why do you get angry about it? Why get upset about it? So, then the guy comes back with, well, if somebody spreads talk about me at work, and people believe it, it's going to hurt me and other people. And then begins this big argument, okay? Tonight's class is all about, what do you do when someone keeps you from getting a good name or praise or fame, especially fame? And this part of the patience chapter is about what do you do when someone attacks your good name? You know, what do you do when someone attacks your reputation? And even prevents you, you know, you're on the brink of becoming a famous Buddhist teacher. And then people start spreading rumors about you. So what, you know, what do you do then? You see what I mean? What should you do then? And that's what this whole chapter is about. Verse 90. He's gonna begin attacking the idea of fame. Okay? Of fame. And there's big fame and there's little fame. Okay? Like when you have one student, you feel pretty famous already. Then you get up to five in Hell's Kitchen. Then you get up to 10 in Leon's place. And then you get up to 50 at the Japanese place. Then you get up to 100 in the Quaker house. And then you get up to 200 in the public school. And then, no, and how does that go, you see? What does that do for you? See, how does it help me to have more people think I'm a great person? You see what I mean? And then Master Geltabde, he's pulling Prajnakaramati out. Okay, just so you know, this is why we went back to the Sanskrit. He says, you know, the old Sanskrit original commentary, it says there's five things that you can rightly want in your life. If you're going to be a good Buddhist, if you're going to be a good person, there's five things that, sort of five conditions that would be helpful. Now let's see if fame covers any of them. Okay, so what's the first one here? It's not a good deed to be famous. It's not good karma. Okay? It's not good karma. So what are wise people interested in? Should I do this or shouldn't I do this? Why? Is it good karma or bad karma? Well, getting famous, is that good karma or bad karma? Nothing. It's a result, right? It's not good karma or bad karma. It's just nothing. Okay? It doesn't help you to get famous. It's not a good deed. It's not good karma. Okay? So from that point of view, a wise person would say, I don't need that. Then I don't need that. It's like, give me like 20 pounds of garlic. I don't eat garlic. You know, I don't need it. I don't need it. You know? Don't give it to me. I don't need it. You see? So fame is like that. For a good person, a really good person. No, I can't use this. There's nothing I can use this for. It's not going to make me, it's not going to give me good karma to be famous. Okay, what's the second one? Doesn't make me live longer. Okay, like fame doesn't make you live longer, right? Your name gets out in Tricycle and then it spreads to Shambhala's son and then maybe you make it to the big time yoga journal and Time magazine picks you up. There's this progression, right? And then CNN and then you're like, but that doesn't make you live any longer. You see what I mean? It doesn't expand your lifespan. Which is what a saint or a yogi would want. A yogi would want to live a long time. Because if you really have something to offer people, you want to live a long time. You also need time to meditate. You need time to take care of your own spiritual life. Okay? So, fame isn't a good karma for me. And it doesn't make me live longer. Nor does it make me more powerful. Powerful here means to have the energy to do good stuff. It doesn't make you like strong, like give you energy to do good stuff. Okay? Fame doesn't do that for you. These are like all the five things that a wise person would want to have. And fame, so far, fame is like a bag of garlic. Okay? Fourth one, it doesn't keep me healthy. Okay? It doesn't keep you healthy. And I remember like the Shah of Iran had, I was in the diamond business. We were dealing with some large stones. And it's important that there shouldn't be any other large stones available when you want to sell your large stone. Like I'm talking 30 carat stone, 20 carat stone, 100 carat stone. Like small bird eggs. You know, like you don't want the Queen of Belgium to be selling her crown jewels when the Queen of England is selling hers at one time, because then all the prices go down. So then we were dealing with Christie's auction house and Sotheby's, and we had these large stones, and then suddenly the whole thing collapses. Why? The Shah of Iran has just swiped all the Iran crown jewels, because he has cancer. And he comes to New York, he's got these jewels, I mean, you wouldn't believe these jewels. It's like baskets of huge diamonds, right? And he's like throwing them around everywhere in New York. Prices are plummeting. You know, we're like, could you stop that? You know, and he's like, no. He's going to every fancy doctor he can get because he has cancer, right? And he's like throwing an egg over here, and selling these things. And millions and millions of dollars. But it didn't help, you know. He just died like that. He just died like a dog, you know. It's nothing. So it's not going to make you live longer to be a big shot. You see what I mean? So it's no use, okay. It doesn't make you healthier. It can't save your health, right? And last thing, makes your body feel good. I don't know quite why this is in the list, okay? Like, I've gone back to the ancient scriptures, and I don't know exactly why a yogi would want to feel good physically. I guess maybe it puts you in a better mood or something, like you can be more pleasant to people. Or you can speculate maybe tomorrow in your... Go home and think about it. I don't know. You know, the Tibetan is clearly, and the Sanskrit is clearly, it makes you feel good in your body. And fame doesn't do that. Fame doesn't cause any physical reaction in your body that's useful. So therefore, fame is like a bag of garlic. It's not good karma for you. It doesn't make you live longer. It doesn't make you stronger. It doesn't keep you from getting cancer. And it doesn't physically change your body at all. It doesn't make you, you know, give you some kind of physical sensation. So it's just useless. Okay, that's Master Shantideva's opening argument, right? And I'm sure in your mind a lot of buts came up. Okay? Like he was a great debater. He's setting up for all your buts. Okay? There's a guy who comes in throughout the chapter, the Kachik, the guy who says but. He doesn't realize that Master Shantideva has set him up like three verses before. He's setting up all the buts in your mind. Okay? I'll tell you what the next but is. Verse 91. The guy says, I agree. Fame isn't good karma for me. Fame doesn't make me feel physically better. Fame doesn't increase my lifespan. It doesn't give me energy. But I like it. Okay? I just like it. You know, all those people bowing, Geshe Michael, oh, hello, you look so good. You know, in the diamond business, there is this thing. I was a buyer, and the buyer has tremendous power. A buyer is spending $40-50 million a year in the market. So every salesman in New York, when they see you on the street, it's like, oh, Geshe Michael, that suit you're wearing is so nice today. You know, oh, you're so smart. I know you know Sanskrit too. Oh, God, you know, you're so cool. And then, you know, and then one day I'm like, there's a guy named Ajit, you know, and I said, Ajit, tell me honestly, if I lost this job tomorrow and you saw me on the street, would you even talk to me? And he's like, well, I don't know. You know? You know what I mean? It's like that. Why is that relevant? I don't remember. Anyway, it'll come to me. He says, oh, it's like about being famous. It makes you feel good. Yeah, it just feels good. Like a buyer, a diamond buyer or a buyer in Macy's, they all get this disease. They get buyer's disease. You get like very big head because you think it's your money. It's your $20 million you're spending. And you're just a schmuck employee for this other company, you know. But anyway, you get this big feeling. And people are so good to you and they keep saying nice things to you. And it feels great. It'll get you up in the morning. It'll make you go spend $800 on a suit, you know. It's like, man, I am somebody, you know. I am big stuff, you know. People finally recognized it, you know. And it feels good. Okay, so this is how the guy comes back to Master Shantideva. I understand it doesn't make me live longer. I understand I still might get cancer, you know. But it sure feels good when people are praising me or I get famous to see my name in Tricycle Magazine and stuff, whole article, you know. It feels good. So Shantideva, remember his audience is mostly monks, right? He's giving this lecture to the monks at Nalanda Monastery. So he says, well, then you should go get some chicks to come into the monastery and you should go get a couple of cases of beer. And you should go out and buy some expensive jewelry and stuff. And they say, why? He says, it makes you feel good. You know? So you should just do whatever makes you feel good. You see? If that's your, what do you call it, criterion for what's right or wrong. You know, if it just feels good, then you should do all this other stuff that monks aren't allowed to do. Okay? And that's his argument. Okay? I think here you have to think about the addiction to attention You know? And there's some, Alanis Morissette called it, what is that? Something, supposed infatuation junkie? She calls it an infatuation junkie. Okay? If you don't know Alanis Morissette, she's like this famous singer. But she's very introspective, and she caught herself like getting angry at every other pop singer that ever got a good review. You see? And she caught herself and she said, what's going wrong? What's getting into me? I hear that Sarah McLachlan cut a good album and everyone likes it, and that my review was shorter than her review. And then I go crazy, you know? Like, I get all jealous and I start getting mad, you know? What's wrong with me? I'm an infatuation junkie, she says. And then she did an album called Infatuation Junkie, and it went bigger than Sarah McLachlan's album. But anyway, so yeah, you get addicted to it. Okay, I think he's pointing out, you know, you get addicted. There's a pleasure to being well known, and you get addicted to it. And the great gurus and the great lamas, you know, I read an article by Master Shivananda, Swami Shivananda. And it was very beautiful. And he wrote a whole letter to his disciples. His disciples include Satchidananda, Satyananda, Saraswati, Vishnu Devananda, who became very famous in their own right. They all became big shot swamis, right? And he's like warning them when they're 15, 20 years old. He's like saying, you're going to get up in front of a crowd of people. You're going to give some teaching, whether it's intelligent or not. And a certain percentage are going to start to glom onto you. You know, like 10%, 20%. They're going to run up afterwards and tell you how good you look and how smart you are. And then you're going to get this poison. This poison's going to start running through your veins. You know, infatuation junkie. You know, then you start to need it. You know, then it's not enough if 300 people showed up. You know? Like, you used to be happy with 5 people showing up. You used to be happy when 10 people showed up. Used to be happy when Mark Shirelli came and sat on my bed in Howell and we just talked about Dharma, you know? But now I gotta have 300 people. I'm not, you know, it's not working. And you get addicted. It's an addiction. And I think he's comparing this kind of addiction to alcohol addiction or addiction to sex or addiction to expensive things. He's just saying it's just one more addiction, you see? So watch out. And you know, we have a lot of teachers growing up in this organization. A lot of them are here today. And I just very much warn you. You know what I mean? And it's like any other addiction. It just crawls up on you, sneaks up on you, and you don't know you have it until the poop hits the fan, right? Until you take a fall. You don't know you have this addiction. And you have to watch it. And I was thinking, I'm just thinking about myself, my own experience with this, you know, with this problem. And I think, how can you detect that you're starting to get this addiction, right? Like, what advice would I give to people who are going to be the American lamas of the next generation? Which you are, and you should be. And you're doing a really good job. You really are doing a good job. It's amazing. It's a whole revolution has begun. But then we got to watch out for this poison. I think the best thing I can say, the most... to test if this poison is running in your veins or not, how do you feel when you hear about another successful teacher? You see? That's the test. And I struggled with that personally, you know? I've had that... I can tell you from personal experience, you know? You can check, reality check, for you upcoming teachers. And you are great teachers, you are good teachers, you are well-trained teachers. But, and they don't teach you this in the monastery, you know? There isn't a course about what to do when you hit the United States and you start your Dharma Center and 3 girls attack you. You know, there's no course like that. They send these innocent geshes to America, you know? Oh, they know philosophy. It's not enough, you know? You gotta be able to deal with infatuation addiction, right? So I think, as a test, as a reality check, how do you feel about other teachers? Your peers, you know, if you're teaching yoga, what's your relationship with the other yoga teachers in town? Is it like this thing, you know, like, yeah, they have that thing, but it's not a real lineage. Or, yeah, they're good, you know, they've only hurt 4 people this week. But I straighten them out, I help them out, you know, and, you know, and stuff like that. Like, or do you really embrace each other, you know, and it's this thing of, if all the yoga teachers in New York really embraced each other, and as a group tried to help their students. You know, I have a student, he's not going to work out in Shivananda system. He's all got these muscles, he's all tense up. He needs this Ashtanga thing to get his sweat out. You take him. You know what I mean? And there should be this kind of thing going on, where all the teachers are like plotting together, conspiracy to help all the yoga students in New York. And just send them to each other if they need each other's help. You see what I mean? Resource with each other. But if you feel the opposite way, if you feel like this competitive feeling, or you're kind of like always criticizing another yoga center, or if you're an ACI teacher and you're like, how many people signed up for my course? How many signed up for Margie's course? Oh God, she's got three more people than I do. You know? And if that's, if you want to know, this is from my own personal experience. I went through hard times, right? I went through the addiction that anyone would go through. So it's good. You think about it. And I'm just thinking of a litmus test for you. How do you feel about other teachers? You know, when you hear, you know, can you really take joy when other people are getting praised? You know? Then you know you're okay. Then you know you're not an infatuation junkie. Okay? I think that's the easiest test. Okay, that finishes verse 91. Verse 92 is about the extremes that people will go to get famous. Okay? And I've seen this in the diamond business, in the, you know, there are people, they get wealthy off of their company. Their company goes well, they get wealthy. And then just to get famous, they will spend so much money, and they're blind to this addiction that they have. You know what I mean? And so I've seen people spend all their money, like they made $20 million, $30 million, and they'll just blow it on an ad campaign for Michael Roach custom jewelry. You know, like, if it has their name on it. Oh, I'm just trying to make a label. What name are you using? My name. Oh, yeah. How much are you spending on that campaign? $20 million. Do you have $20 million? Well, I got 10, I borrowed 5, I can figure out what to do. And there's this, I don't know, addiction to getting famous, to having people know about you. And then people will just spend everything they have to get known, to get their name known. And a lot of the famous people you know are broke, trust me. You know? No. They just want to be famous. And they don't have any money. You know? It's really weird. And they've splurged it all to get famous. People hire people to get their name in people's magazine. You know? And they'll spend anything. And it's weird. And it's just another kind of addiction. So he says, some people do that. Then there's other kinds of people. I was down in Florida State. Was it Florida? I got in trouble there, actually. I called it Florida State, and it was actually the University of Florida. Whatever. Anyway, I called it the wrong one, and the football team was going to kill me. But anyway, Gainesville.
That's University of Florida.
University of Florida. Okay. I was at the University of Florida, you know, and I've been in retreat for 3.5 years, and we're walking to the place where we're giving our talk, and there's all these people dressed up as, it's like Halloween, they're all dressed up as army soldiers, walking around the campus, you know, and I'm like, what's going on? Is it like some special joke today, you know, because this girl comes by in this whack outfit, you know, very well tailored. Like the pants are really well tailored and the jacket, and there's all these things here, and she's like, you know, walking. And I'm like, man, you know. And then there's this guy coming down with a full gorilla outfit, you know, like special forces with a canteen and a big knife and everything. I'm like, in the middle of the campus, you know, and I'm like, you know, what is this? And then I asked the professor, it was a university, I said, you know, what's going on? You know, and he says, that's the way it is. All these kids are in the army now. They're in the army. Those girls are in the army, you know. And they think it's cool. They love it. And the boys go crazy over them. And the girls go crazy over them. And they just think it's the neatest thing, you know. And like, I grew up in a time when I went to college, we got ROTC banned from college. We got it out of the college. It really great sacrifice. Many people worked very hard and got it banned. And then you come and everybody's like, look at my uniform, you know? And this other guy's got this bigger knife than the other guy, and I'm like, in the middle of a campus, these 18, 16, 17-year-old people, and what's going on? Then they just, you know, they got this idea of glory, right? Front of Time magazine. People of Man of the Year, Woman of the Year, is three soldiers, you know? It's unthinkable before a three-year retreat. And I'm like, what's going on, you know? And these guys are, you know, and it's like really sexy and it looks like a kung fu movie. These guys are going to get their hands blown off. These guys are going to get their legs blown off. This lady with the nice tailored suit is going to have her guts shot out, you know? And she's going to end up in some veterans hospital with a $5 an hour person taking care of them for 20 years. You know, are you crazy? You know, what's wrong with you? I'm going to get famous, you know? I'm going to be... People are going to put me on the cover of Time magazine. So Master Shantideva, he's talking. People think like that, you know? He mentions it here. These are, he's talking about the University of Florida. Okay? No, he's like, people will end up killing themselves to get their name in the newspaper. Literally. Okay? Then he's like, he says, if you die, who's going to enjoy the fame? Like, who's going to read the Time magazine if you get your head shot off? You know, it doesn't quite make sense. You get it? You know, you're going to get your head blown off. You won't be able to read about what a great soldier you were. You see what I mean? And like that. Then he says, anyway, what does the alphabet do for you? What can the alphabet do for you? What he's saying is that people will risk all their money to get famous. And people will risk their life to get famous. Right? And anyway, what are you getting famous for? Some words? A bunch of words? What's it do? Then he says the alphabet. Why does he say the alphabet? It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. He says, what does ABC, what's this obsession you have with ABC? You see? What's ABC? Why will you risk your life for ABC? You know, and on one level, what's he talking about? Okay, like you get your name in the newspaper. God, it just goes away, you know. People go through New York City trying to throw out their New York Times, you know. It'll just get thrown out. It'll be more garbage on a scow going to Argentina, you know, to get, because there's no place to throw it out anymore in the Northeast, you know. You've just contributed more to the eco-disaster, you know. You got your name on the paper, and the paper won't be there in 2 weeks, you know. What's the point? It's just words, you know. But then there's a deeper thing here, right? He's talking about karma. He's talking about emptiness. Okay? What is words? Words is alphabet. You know, if somebody says Geshe Michael is a wonderful teacher, that's just a W and an O and an N. What's the big deal? You see? What's he saying? It's about emptiness. Your karma makes you recognize the word. You see? If I write a squiggle like this, and a squiggle like that, and a squiggle like that, what made you even understand it was a word? Your karma. Are you saying words are empty also? Exactly. Words are empty. Nagarjuna thought it was so important he wrote a book about it, called The Emptiness of Words. Words is just alphabet. It's just alpha, beta, omega. Quack, buck, book, go, book. You know, it's just noises. You're going to risk your life for noises? You know, no, they're not just noises. They have meaning. Who gives them the meaning? You do. They're just black and white ink. They're just old fossils that God put in a pen. You know, that's all. What's the matter with you? It's just noises. He says, no, I hear it. I understand it. They're praising Michael Roach. They say he's a wonderful teacher, you know. I understand the words. Why do you understand the words? Why do you understand words? Why? When someone praises you, when someone says, you're a wonderful teacher, you're better than all the other teachers in New York, why do you understand them? Because you took care of other teachers in the past. Because you rejoiced in other teachers' work in the past. You were modest, humble, and you let other people stand up in the past. And you pushed other people up to be the teachers in the past. That's why you can figure out what the words mean. Get it? The words are just black. The words are just white. They're just kuk, bok, bok, wok. You know? Then your mind organizes it into, they like you, Geshe Michael. You see what I mean? Why? Why do you hear it? Because you took care of other people in the past. Only reason. So what are you doing now? I'm watching out for me. You see? Fame focuses your mind on what? Me. It takes your mind off others. Then the very thing that you're going to want is fame will go away. It will run away. The minute you start wanting fame, it runs away. You see? The karma to get famous is to be humble and make other people speak. Make other people be the teachers. Help other people be teachers. Don't try to hog all the glory yourself. If you keep pushing other people ahead of you, then you end up at the front of the line. Get it? That's how it works. You see what I mean? So, it's very deep. You got to think about it. The very words that people use to tell you you're so wonderful. The words exist and you understand the words because you let other people get the credit in the past. And you didn't try to get it for yourself. You see what I mean? Get it? It's just like when you get angry at somebody, when someone hurts you and you hurt them back, you're just making another person come to hurt you. Okay? The minute you start to want fame, to want people to say you're the best teacher in New York, then it will go away. You see what I mean? Same thing, same principle. Because it's just words. It's just sounds. Got it? Okay, next one. He starts in this verse to talk about what happens when you lose fame. Okay, everybody, if you don't die first, you lose your fame. Well, Andy Warhol said you get 15 minutes of fame. Sometimes you get 20 minutes, sometimes you get a year, sometimes you get a year and a half. But it always ends, trust me. It always ends, okay? You get sick, there's a woman dying in Washington as we speak, you know? There's a very good woman. She gave her house to Ken Rinpoche to have the classes there for 20 years in Washington. She's dying this week, you know? And I called up people, I said, who's at her side? Who's helping her out? Oh, I was busy. Oh, I didn't have time to talk to her, you know, or I got other stuff to do. And the minute you start getting sick, when you're not pretty anymore, or you don't have money anymore, or you got wrinkles now, or you don't have a position anymore, people will just forget about you, you see? Even good people will forget about you, you see? That's the way it goes. Fame is like that. The karma to have everyone think you're cool just stops. It ends. Every famous person, they either die or they get unfamous. Okay? And that's the way it goes. So what happens? How do we respond to that? We get up, we throw a tantrum, he says. You're like kids. You were like a kid when you wanted to get famous, and now you're like a kid when you're not famous anymore. You know? And then they struggle, like, what do you call? Old soap actresses. You know, and then they struggle, you know. They'll take off their clothes in front of a television camera. Anything to get some more attention. Junkie, right? And people won't want to look at them anymore. You see what I mean? Because the fame goes away. Then you get like all upset. You're like kids, he says. And then he says it's like you build castles out of sand. And then they fall down. And then you get all upset. The whole thing was stupid in the first place. The whole famous thing was stupid in the first place. And then when you lose it, you're stupid again. Then you get all upset about it. Okay? I think you gotta say one more thing here, right? Can fame be used constructively? No, I mean, the Dalai Lama is famous. Is this a bad thing? I don't think so. I think you have to be careful about it, you know? I think you have to think about it, you know? It depends on the person involved, right? It's like a match. You can use a match to burn down a house. Or you can use a match to cook a dinner. And fame is like a match, I think. I think at a certain point in your spiritual development, you get this thing called Vaisharadhyaya. What is it? Gyatma Prasada? Is that how it goes? Vaisharadhyaya? Say Vaisharadhyaya? Gyatma Prasada. If you were at the Yoga Sutra thing and we couldn't cover all the things at the end, that's one of the things at the end. Okay? Vaisharadhyaya means in Tibetan Minjikpa. Minjikpa. It means fearlessness. Fearlessness. And every enlightened person, or as you get advanced in your spiritual practice, you get Vaisharajya. You get Minjikpa. You get fearlessness. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you're not afraid of anything? It doesn't mean that. There's four kinds of Vaisharajya. And what it means is, you're not afraid to stand up and say, yeah, I do know how the world works. Like, once you've figured it out, if you've seen emptiness directly or something like that, then you get this fearlessness. What do you call it? You're not afraid to stand up and say, look, this is the way reality works. Look, this is where stuff really comes from. Look, this is what you should do with your life. You know, I saw it. I saw it directly. You know what I mean? And then you get to this point where you're not afraid to stand up and say, I did. I saw it. And I can help you. You know, that's like that. So I think that kind of fame, at that point, I think it would be a kind of attachment not to toot your horn. It's like Jesus said, don't, what is it? You get a light, you hold it up on the top of the mountain, you don't cover it with a garbage can. Right? Like a light. You know, if you got something to say that's helpful, then I think you have to watch out for the opposite. You see? You're like too shy, or you think it would be people would misinterpret you if you were too almost pushy, or if you talked about yourself too much, people would take it the wrong way, so you don't want to talk about yourself. But what you have to say would save many people's lives. I think you've got to have also Vaisharajya. I think at a certain point, when you know you have something that would help a lot of people, you got to be willing to go out and push it. You know what I mean? Not in a, what do you call it? Proselytizing. Not proselytizing. But you should be willing to get up and say, look, I studied 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And I meditated goddamn hard. You know? And something happened to me. And I can really help you. And I really can. And do this. Just check it out. Try it. I think you, not to do that is also a kind of attachment. You see, I mean, if you do have training, if you can help people, then you should have Minjikpa. You know, you should be fearless to stand up and say what you know. So I think there's a difference between a wrong attachment to fame and using whatever means you can in a gentle, happy, healthy, mentally, emotional, stable way to tell people what you know and to get it out. So I think at a certain point, you know, to advertise a class that's being held, if it's free, you see, or something like that, that's a good thing. And I think to go to Tricycle Magazine and say, we got this thing going on, you should know about it. People might want to know about it. And then you shouldn't be afraid to get up and do that too. So there's a healthy kind of desire to get the word out, and then there's a very unhealthy desire to get your name out. Okay? Next. This is a kind of, I don't know if I like this argument too much, but I'll tell you what it says. Okay? When someone praises you, if they say, oh, you're such a great guy, you're such a great teacher, right? Do the words themselves have any intention to praise you? Does A, B, and C think to itself, let's get together, let's make wonderful, and let's say it to Geshe Mark. You see what I mean? No, the letters don't think, right? Letters can't think, right? So W and O and N and D and E and R didn't have a meeting with F and U and L and decide to say something nice about Geshe Michael, right? Because they didn't have mind, right? They're at the mercy of the person who's talking, right? So why get excited at the words, right? I think you can take this argument back to the thing with the stick. Do you remember the thing with the stick? Yeah, you shouldn't get mad at the guy who hit you with a stick. You should get mad at the stick. No, I shouldn't. The guy makes the stick hit me. Well, then you shouldn't get mad at the guy because his anger made him say that hit you with the stick. You should get mad at anger. Anger itself. And it's the same thing with here. Oh, don't, what, are you going to, is it that W, O, and N got together and decided to call you wonderful? No, they don't have a mind. Then why do you get all excited when people with a mind say you're wonderful? Well, because they can decide to praise me or praise somebody else, and they decide to praise me. No, they didn't. Your karma made them do that. Your karma made them do that. You can't, it's not their decision. Your karma made that. Okay? Got it? So you can't like take credit. You can't get all excited about people saying nice things to you. If people say nice things to you, it's because of what? You said nice things to other people. They are just a vehicle. They're like the stick. They're not working on their own locomotion. Okay? People aren't working. People who call you a great teacher are not operating under their own locomotion. The steam or the battery that's running them is your karma. Okay? So if you want to get famous, make sure other people get famous. Right? Alright. But then the guy says, the thing I really like about being famous is that it makes so many other people happy. Like he's really getting twisted, right? No, it's like your mind. Master Shantideva is so cool. These are all the twists on the twists that your mind puts on stuff. Oh, it's good that Geshe Michael should be famous. Why? It makes so many people happy. You see? If everybody thinks I'm a wonderful person, then like 200-300 people will go home happier than before. That's why I want to get famous. That's all. So then Master Shantideva in the next verse, and then I'll give you refreshments, okay? Because it's too hot, Michael. Where's Michael?
No heat on.
No heat on. You got two more or something. I don't know. Okay. He says, but you know something strange? I didn't see you getting as happy when everyone was happy about the other teacher. You know? Okay? Like, if the reason you want to be famous is that everybody would be happy, then I didn't see you getting so excited when they were all happy at the other teacher. Did you? Okay? That's his thing. Like, you weren't so concerned for everybody else's happiness when it was someone else's that was getting famous to make them happy. Get it? Okay. Yeah, that's all. Let's take a break. Okay? Have some refreshments. Christy and I will be up here. Sit here if you want to just say hi or anything like that. Verse 95, he says, you say the reason you want to be famous is that it makes so many other people happy, right? And the guy says, right. And he says, but you don't get any of that happiness yourself. So why are you so concerned about it? I don't like this argument. I don't like this argument. To me, didn't he just say in one of the other classes that you should take joy in other people's... When other people get praised, you should take joy because, you know, don't be jealous, don't have envy, just be happy. Because you can share in their joy. And then here he says you can't share in their joy. So I don't know, you go figure. Okay, next verse. 96. This is where he tells the guy, oh yeah, you want to get famous because it makes people happy. But then when that other yoga teacher got famous, were you so happy? Because other people were happy. Okay? And then he said, nah, okay, he caught you. Okay? That's where he goes into that argument, so you know that one. You may notice I'm going a little bit fast because they're going to close the building. Verse 97. Being so concerned about getting famous, therefore, the whole trip about getting well known is nothing more than chiba. Chiba means a kid, and they have different words in Tibetan for kids of different ages. Like if you're from 2 to 4 years old, it's called chiba. Okay, and then 4 to 6 is called something else, and you know, like that. So chiba means specifically someone from the age of 2 to 4. It also refers to a person who has not recognized ultimate reality directly. Okay? It's also a code word in Buddhist philosophy and Indian philosophy for a person who has not seen reality directly. Okay? And this has to happen in a deep state of meditation. We can't go in it tonight. We talked about it at the Yoga Sutra. By the way, somebody asked me, you're going to teach the second part of the Yoga Sutra in August. I said, yeah. They said, is it only for people who took the first part? And the answer is no, you're welcome to come. The chapters are actually pretty discreet from each other. And chapter 2 in the Yoga Sutra, it hangs on its own. So don't worry about that. If you missed chapter 1, you're welcome to come to chapter 2. Okay. So he says, you're just acting like a child, is really saying, you have to work harder in your meditations. Okay? That's what it means. It means you're still a baby meditator. Okay? It's also just childish to want to be famous. Okay? Okay. Next verse. Inside here, they have five different results of getting famous that hurt you. Okay? Five ways in getting famous hurts you. And we'll just go through them one by one. Number one, he says, praise and the rest distract you. You get this thing very, very common in yoga, very, very common in Tibetan lamas, very common in American teachers. You work hard. You master your craft, whether it's yoga or meditation or Sanskrit or Tibetan or whatever it is, being a monk, like you work hard in your student years. Then you start to teach. Then you suddenly get famous. Then you're too busy to what? You're too busy to do the stuff you got famous for. And it happens to many, many, many people. You often see it in yoga studios. Like the person who built the studio, the person who went to India and struggled for 10, 20 years to learn this craft, and then they got to the United States and they opened up this place, and then suddenly they're just doing IRS forms all day. You know what I mean? And their yoga practice goes down the tubes. No, and that's what happens. And you have to be very, very careful. And I went through that, you know. I went to my lama in 1994. I said, I got hundreds of students now. They said, very good, but how's your meditation? I said, I'm not meditating anymore. They said, then you're just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. How can you teach people meditation if you're too busy to meditate? What's that mean? And they fried me, you know, my lama fried me, you know. And so like now you have to keep to your schedule. So we have a schedule. It's like we do our practice until we finish our practice, we don't go out of the house, we don't talk. And that's I think that's very important for people. Fame can be very destructive. It takes a lot of maintenance to be famous, you see. The time it takes to, if you're not like speaking at 10 places a month, you know, like you won't maintain your fame, you see. So then that's 10 days a month that you're not doing your meditation or you're not doing your yoga or you're on a plane somewhere. And you know what I mean? So it's distracting. And a real yogi should sort of avoid it in a way, okay? Okay, second one. Destroys your feelings of dismay with life. If you start to get, you know, why did I become a monk? Because I saw the pain of relationships and because I saw the pain of my parents' death and my brother. My brother and my two parents died in the same year. So like, boom, you know, you wake up. It's a wake-up call to reality. You know, I should be concentrating on something important, like death, you know, like pain, you know. Then what happens? You get famous, you see. Then people are handing you money. People are calling you up for book contracts. People are inviting you to Timbuktu to give a talk. They'll pay for your airfare and you get to stay in this big hotel. And then suddenly the world looks pretty nice, you see. And then death kind of sneaks up on you. You see what I mean? It's better to have some death in your life. You know? It's better because it's what's real. That's what's really going on. And this fame thing can lull you into sleep. You know, you go back to sleep. You don't remember your parents. You don't remember your brother, you know? You don't remember why you became a monk. Everyone likes me. I gotta run. I have a book contract to talk about, you know? And then the world seems pretty good, you know? And then suddenly death hits you on the head. Like, you're walking to Doubleday and you step out in front of a car and they kill you before you sign the contract. Okay. Then the next one is like envy, right? Like you start to feel envy towards other people, you know? And again, I would say that's a good judge of whether you're getting infatuation, junkie disease, or not, you know? Do you rejoice in other people's good music? Or are you jealous because they got the album contract and you didn't? You see what I mean? And I think that's how you can tell if you're going the wrong way. Okay. Then it says it obliterates everything excellent. And you need a commentary for that. Gyaltsep Jay and Master Prajnakara Mati, they say ultimately it means you'll screw up the big thing. What's the big thing? I want to take care of every living creature. Okay? If you get distracted, if you go off on this attention junkie thing, then you won't pay attention to the big thing that you're supposed to be doing, which is you're supposed to be taking care of everybody else. Okay? So you'll get distracted. You'll ruin the big thing. Punsok, that's what Punsok's name means. The big excellent thing. Okay? Okay. Verse 99. When you get famous, you get jealous. When you get jealous, you get angry. When you get... Oh, sorry. Did I do it? Only four? You got me. Let me see. Distract me. Destroy, dismay. Feel envy. I guess it's only four, to tell you the truth. Sorry. You got me. Okay. It's only four. If you keep up this attention junkie thing, if you keep that up, then you'll get envy towards other people, right? You'll get jealous of other people who are getting more attention than you. This is the nature of wanting attention, right? Then you'll get angry because envy is the brother of anger. They're just same thing. They're different forms of the same thing. They say zechik dobatade. Say zechik dobatade. My lama went into a convenience store and he looks around and he says, man, it's just everything is zechik dobatade. I said, what do you mean? He says, it's all the same stuff in different packages. You know? It's just sugar, flour, water, corn syrup in 20 different packages. You know, whether it's a pie or whether it's a donut or whether it's chips or... Americans just, they all eat the same very bad food in different forms, in different formats. You see what I mean? And he said, there's nothing in here I can eat. You know, we just left. He said, zechik dobatade. So anger and envy are just the same thing in different packages. Okay, anger and envy are just that. If you get anger, if it builds up to anger, then you put seeds in your mind that will make you go to a very bad place when you die. Okay? We talked about that. We talked about that. Now, here's the leap that he's going to make now. You ready? He's going to make a new leap. If someone talks bad about you, if someone starts rumors about you, if someone goes to the boss and tells them either something true or untrue about you that prevents you from getting famous, then didn't they just protect you from hell? You should be thankful. You should congratulate. They should shake their hand. Thank you for lying about me to the boss. You know, why? Because you prevented me from getting that VP position. Well, what's so great about that? Well, then I won't be jealous of the other VPs because I'm just a schmuck middle manager now. You know, and then, you see? And you should go and thank them. And this is like crazy wisdom, you know. People say crazy wisdom is to go out and drink a lot of beer and then wear a monk's robe or something like that. It's not like that. Crazy wisdom is to like thank somebody for spreading rumors about you. Or you go to them and you take them out to lunch and you just treat them like, you give them a royal treatment, you know. You tried to screw me, right? Yeah. So hey, you want to go for lunch? You want to go have lunch? I'm paying. No, and that's crazy wisdom, you see. That's crazy wisdom. It's beautiful wisdom, you see. And I encourage you not to think of this as some kind of metaphor or, what do you call it, noble thought or something like that that has no practical benefit. That's the best way to handle people who are trying to screw you. Just take care of them. Just take care of them. The heart will melt after a while. Some hearts take longer than others. Okay? If you keep fighting, struggling against them, just be this Mexican standoff forever. You know what I mean? There's just a standoff. Unilaterally, that's the important word. Unilaterally, just from your side, go to them and say, you know, I know how you feel about me, or you don't have to say that. It's just like, they're trying to screw you. Everybody in the office knows they're trying to screw you. And you go to them and you say, you know, I'd like to go out to lunch with you. Oh, you wanna fight with me, right? You wanna talk me into not saying bad stuff about you. No, I just wanna take you out to lunch. I don't want anything else out of you. From my side, you don't have to take me out to lunch, you don't have to stop talking bad. You can say all the bad stuff about me you want. I just want you to have a nice lunch. And sooner or later the heart will melt. Okay, that's the way That's the real way to fight this kind of problem, okay? So you should be happy. And that's really hard and you have to practice it, okay? Crazy wisdom is really cool. And it just speaks for itself. It just shuts all the junk off in a second, you know? Somebody comes up and says, I just want to take you out to lunch. No obligations. I'll pay any place you want. But I've been trying to screw you for 6 months. I know. Let's go out to lunch, you know? Okay? No, try it. It's really fun. It's kind of cool, really. It's kind of cool. It's really cool. If you get into this debate and you're fighting and whose sides, who's on my side, who's on your side, I'm defending myself. It's just wasted energy. It's just, don't even think about it. If you're going to be a real yogi, just take him out to lunch. Okay. Don't put anything in the lunch. The next verse is like, they're trying to, what do you call it? Fame will chain you to this life. Okay? You can't go on a long retreat if you're famous. You got contracts. You got places to be. You got people who want to see you, you know? You're too busy to go on retreat. You see? You can't drop your life for a month or 6 months or 3 years. I'm famous, you know? And it was hard. The week we went into three-year retreat, Susan Schwartz was there. Time magazine calls. We want to do an article. I'm like, are we going to delay retreat? No. And it was really hard, you know? It's like, it was, but we just went in retreat. And it's, but see, if you get too much into the attention thing, you'll never be able to drop that. You'll never be able to give that up. You see what I mean? And to give it up is so wonderful. You know, after 2 or 3 years in retreat, there's this quiet because no one's thinking about you anymore. You see? It's like you just go out and you try to listen to people thinking about you and it's just dead silence. You know, and you're like, you know, to die, right? I mean, in the Catholic Church or the Russian Catholic Church, it was like Orthodox Church, it was like when you become a monk, you just die. You see? You just die. And to be able to die to the world is very pleasant. It's really pleasant. I'm not worried about what's going to happen to my ratings. I'm not worried about whether my book sells. You know, I'm not worried about people not going to be thinking about me in 6 months. I'm going on retreat. You know, I don't own anything. I don't own anybody. And you just go. You know, and if you're all caught up in what people think about you or fame stuff, then you won't be able to drop it, you see? You'll keep delaying it. And then people die, you know? Death doesn't respect delays, you know? You just die, you know? It doesn't wait for you. It doesn't, oh, you have another book contract? I'll wait 6 months, you know? It's not like that. It just pops on you, you see? So, actually a person who's talking bad about you then is helping you be free. They're taking chains off of you. You'll be available for something higher. Okay? That's a cool idea, okay? When somebody screws you, like you lost money, you lost fame, you lost your reputation, you lost all your students. But suddenly you're available to do anything, you see? They freed you. You see, I mean, it's a very interesting way to look at it when somebody screws you, okay? And think about it. Someone takes away something that you had, you're suddenly available to get something better. You see what I mean? And think about it that way. When I wanted to get into the diamond business, I answered all the ads in New Jersey, central New Jersey, for diamond, jewelry stores. So like, I can tell you the first interview I went to, and I didn't have anything but a pair of jeans and a plaid shirt, you know, and I walk in there and I'm like, I got this ad, you had a job open in the jewelry store, you know? And the guy looks at me and he's about to tell me to get out, you know? But then this mother walks in with her little girl, you know? And the girl's holding the mom's hand and she looks up at the mom and she says, you're sure this is not going to hurt, right? And the mom says, no, not at all. You know, and they walk up to the counter, so the guy says, get out of the way, I'll talk to you in a minute. You know, so I'm like standing off to the side, you know, and I'm watching, because I don't know anything about jewelry or diamonds. And And the guy, the mom says, she wants to get her ears pierced, you know. And the guy says, okay, come over here, little girl. You sure this is not going to hurt, mom? It's not going to hurt. And they put this gun up to them. And I'm watching, like, this is what I'm going to be doing tomorrow if he hires me, you know. And he puts this thing in it, and there's this bang. You know, and then the little girl looks up at her mother like that, and then she goes, "Wah!" You know, and then and I'm like all shaken, you know, and I'm like, then I went to 30 jewelry stores, and they just threw me out. They said, "What do you know about diamonds?" I said, "Nothing. I just need to learn." You know, "Well, do you like jewelry?" "No, I don't like jewelry." You know, and they're like, they just threw me out. So after 30 jewelry stores, I'm like, that's really bad, right? And then I meet this guy and we start this company, and then it's like $150 million, you know? Like if I had gotten any one of those 30 jobs, I'd still be out in New Jersey for $5 an hour punching little girls' ears, you know? When somebody screws you, you have to think like that. You see what I mean? He's setting you up for the next person. He says, you're dying to get famous. Which means you're dying to get distracted for the rest of your life, so you can't do your yoga practice anymore that you got famous for, and you can't do your meditation anymore that you got famous for, and you can't study anymore because you're too busy teaching people, right? Which is what you're famous for, right? So if somebody comes and screws you, right? No more students, no more income, no more sponsors, you know, no more, nobody thinks nice about you anymore. If somebody can pull that off, goddamn, they are like an enlightened being for you. This is like a Buddha has given you their blessing. You should thank them. You should say, man, there's a Buddha in the world has come and blessed me to have my time back. You see, now I can go meditate in the desert. They're so cool. Thank you, you know. You should think like that. And what he's getting to is this. And consider it. Consider the possibility. What do you want to do with all this stuff? I want to gain patience. Why? I'm going to shoot every obnoxious person in my life with patience. Why? Because that's the only way to get rid of all the obnoxious people in your life. You don't fight with them, you be patient at them, and that eliminates them. You know? Well, so what happens then? Your whole world becomes a paradise. Your whole world becomes a paradise. And then what? Then you can go serve every creature on countless planets, on the surface of countless worlds. You will walk as some holy being in many disguises, and you will serve every living creature there. Countless planets. You will do that. Okay? Sounds good. Has anybody done it before? Lots of people. Where are they? They're disguised. You get it? Okay. But they could they be the person who screwed you last time? You see, you gotta think like that. We're moving right up to Tantra here. This is Kirin. He's moving right up to Tantra. It's very beautiful. It's very beautiful. Master Shantideva is saying, what do you know? You know, the guy who threw you out of the 30 jewelry stores, was that a good thing or a bad thing? He said, I mean, thank God they threw me out of 30 jewelry stores. I'd be there punching these little girls' ears, you know? You know, you don't know. You have to think like that. When something happens and someone like screws you, then you have to think, I'm now available for something higher. You know? I'm not busy this weekend in the little junky jewelry store in Lakewood, New Jersey, you know? I can go to Manhattan for an interview. You see what I mean? You have to see it like that. And what he's saying in this verse is, it could very well be a big plot. And you gotta think like that. The world is a big, what do you call it? This is the opposite of, what do you call that complex? Everyone's out to get you. Like paranoia. What would be the opposite? I don't know. This is like an enlightened paranoia. You know? Everyone's out to get me enlightened. Everyone's trying to get me enlightened. Every time I try to get a store, a job in this little junky jewelry store, they throw me out. You know? What are they trying to do to me? You know? What are they trying to tell us? You see, I mean, keep your eyes out. Keep your antenna up. You know? What are they trying to tell you? You know? When you get screwed going this way, then don't like fight and argue and get angry. You know, say, man, now I'm free to go this way. You can look at it as, oh, they're screwing me, I can't go this way anymore. But take it as a divine message. They are a deity. They are a tantric angel. They're trying to, do you get it? You're supposed to go this way. You know? Don't start fighting with them. Don't start, why come I didn't get this promotion? They're trying to get you over to that other department so you can discover this new thing that'll save 3,000 people a day. Get it? So go look, don't waste your time on this road that's blocked. Put your mind on this road and believe that this person who screwed you is trying to push you that way. Because there's a divine reason to it. You see what I mean? And it's so beautiful. It's such a nice way to live. And then you're always watching out for some cool thing that's coming. And then they come. And then they come. You see? Every time I got screwed, something wonderful came out of it. It's very interesting. So, think about it. Think about it. You know? Think about the last time someone messed you up. And think about all the neat stuff that happened out of it. Okay? I think we should stop there. I think that's a great place to stop. Just cook that. And we'll do the rest tomorrow, whatever. Okay? The next person who screws you is trying to get you to go somewhere. Think about it. Okay? We'll do a little give away the karma thing. Okay? Who's going to do that?
Sashi Puki Chukshin Mikto Tram Rirab Ling Shi Nyen De Kien Padi Sangye Shing Du Mikte Uwar Gi Drokun Nam Dak Shing La Chupar Shok Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nyayata Yami. Now do an act of truth before we give away the karma and say to yourself, if there's one small, minuscule amount of pure intention that I may be able to practice these holy teachings, then may it happen by the power of my intention. Gewa di kewo kun sonam yeshe sok shing. Sonam yeshe le zhong wei dampa kuni topar shuk.